Going Linux, episode 164, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
And I'm your chief executive minion, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
Oh, that's me. We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Tom, I'm glad to see you're not out of practice. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've been getting lots and lots of comments and questions and get well wishes and things for Tom.
As well as
you're doing a great job, Bill. Thanks for filling in for Tom. So
get the bum off the show.
No, we didn't get any of those. So yeah, it's good to have you back. You're feeling better. You're sounding better. That's great.
Yeah, I feel better. Getting a little stronger all the time.
You do sound better.
Sitting up, taking nourishment, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Today's episode of Going Linux is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with over 75,000 titles. If you are a regular listener, you already know that we have a special URL that lets you get a free audiobook from Audible when you sign up for a 14-day free trial. Whether you are a regular listener or a new listener, if you haven't signed up, the place to go to get your free audiobook and 14-day trial is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. There is currently no Audible player that runs natively in Linux, so before you sign up, please make sure that you can run the player under Wine or that you have a portable device like an Android or other smartphone that can run the Audible player. Again, that URL is www.audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux.
All right, and just to show that I'm actually feeling better, I've got a rant today.
Okay.
Yay! Right. And it's about Google Chrome, my favorite browser.
Uh-huh.
And there was an upgrade recently, and they messed up one of my favorite features. And here's what it is. You know how you start typing and it tries to guess what you're going to type?
Yeah.
Okay, it still does that. But there was an option, if you dug way deep into the control room, there was an option so that as it guessed, it would take the top guess and start loading it. For instance, if I just typed N, it would say, well, usually when he types N, he wants Google News, news.google.com. And it would actually load the page or start loading it. And then if I typed EAT, it'd say, no, 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 he wants Nidorama. And it would start loading that page. Well, it doesn't do that anymore. I just loved that.
Ah. Yeah, the advantages of having something that is constantly being developed, like a rolling release of a Linux distro or like Google Chrome. The advantages, you get the latest.
Right.
The disadvantages, you get the latest. You lose some of the stuff you used to have.
Right.
So, yeah, pluses and minuses. Well, I'm sure someday they'll come back into your good graces, Tom. You still prefer it over Firefox, right?
I do, but as we started setting up, as you know, as we started setting up this little conversation, this conference call, I had to get rid of Chrome. I had to close it and go to Firefox because Chrome is a little bit greedy.
Yeah, it is. And I've noticed as well that some of the websites that I go on to for work, if I am using Chrome, sometimes when there's a pick list, like a selection box to choose from on a website, it won't work in Chrome, but it works just fine in Firefox. So
that's
I'm thinking
odd.
That some of these corporate websites still haven't completely made themselves compatible with Chrome or Chromium. So,
I would say try Opera. That's one of my new favorites, and it uses the same WebKit engine, and I find it works well.
Yeah, I tried Opera a while ago, and it was even more resource hungry than Firefox was at the time.
Really?
Yeah, and I know it's slimmed down a lot, so maybe I'll give it another try.
Well, I do have a couple questions for both of you before we move on from the banter. Larry.
Okay. All right.
What are you running?
Mint 12. I haven't changed.
Tom, what are you running?
Same old, same old.
Which is what?
Ubuntu, GNOME, Ubuntu, what, 1104?
1104. Okay. And there's
a point to this, right, Bill?
Yes, there is a point to this. Of course, I've changed again. I think I changed distros like I change pants these days. But I'm running OpenSUSE at 12.01 right now. Or excuse me, 12.1, not 01. And it's really nice.
Well, good. How do you like it?
I like it a lot. It's very fast. Of course, I went and installed the extensions, you know, to give me the functionality back. And
the GNOME 3 extensions?
Yeah, the GNOME 3 extensions. And it's really nice. The only thing that I haven't been able to find how to install, and I'm sure I'm just not looking in the right place, I can't find GPotter.
Oh, really?
Oh.
I can find everything else. And also, OpenSUSE 12.1 was the only Linux distribution that I've tried. Now, operator error is included in all this, I'm saying, but every VM that I've tried to set up, whether it's XP, Windows 7, or another Linux distro, they install flawlessly and work.
Mm-hmm.
And using VirtualBox, and when I try it on Ubuntu or another, I usually have to, there's these little niggly things, as you like to say, that I have to work through. But this one just installs perfectly. I don't know if they've done some under the hood work, but it works well.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about the niggly stuff because you'll be on a different distro next week.
Well, that is a huge possibility, but. I will let you know next week if I'm still on OpenSUSE, and if that's the case, then I'm sure that I'm going to have to pick you up off the floor.
yeah. We'll see. You're our resident distro hopper.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, shall we get into our email, gentlemen?
Why not? That's what we're here for.
Sounds like fun.
Okay. First of all, no voicemail this time, but we are getting a lot of feedback on the forums, and we're getting topic suggestions, and we're getting feedback, like I said, so it's not really email. And so our first is from the forums, and this one's from Bert, who commented about episode 162. That was a great Linux Mint review. I especially liked the comparison with GNOME 3. I have a few tips to add to the task switcher and workspaces. If you use the Alt-Tab to switch between applications and the applications and windows are on the same workspace, you will get all the windows brought to the front. If the application windows are on different workspaces, the window on the workspace you're on will move into focus, or I think the closest workspace to the one you're on. If you want to page through the windows of a particular application, you can Alt-Tab to the application, then while still holding the Alt, Alt-Tilde to the window of that application. You can also, instead of moving the cursor to the upper left corner, get the same effect by hitting the Super key, also known as the W key. You can also use Control Alt up or down to move between workspaces. These key bindings have helped me navigate the new interface. And those key bindings, I think, as we described them there in Bert's comment, it's hard to follow along, but if you try them, they actually work. I had to read the forum post a couple of times and kind of try them along, and they work. It makes sense. So continuing with Bert's comment, I'm not a GNOME guy, really, but I do like the new interface for specific kinds of computing. The options are sparse, but if you don't like to mess around with things, this is the one for you. Most of the defaults are appropriate for the average user, in my opinion. By the way, I have Linux Mint 12 and Debian. The GNOME 3 that I've spent the most time with has been the Debian, but the Mint functions are the same way. I disabled a few of the extensions, taskbar, menu, etc., that were in my way. I really like having a workspace that is free of clutter. About the shutdown, I got Debian updated to include the GNOME 3 and tried to restart. If you log out, you will get a power down icon that you can use to restart, etc. It was about a week before I found the alt trick to expedite the shutdown. One thing I discovered yesterday, you can move workspaces by dragging the workspace up or down. Click and hold the desktop and drag it to the next one. Weird, but kind of cool. Thanks for the great podcast. Get well soon, Tom. Bert.
Thanks, Bert.
Yeah. And I'm actually using Cinnamon now on Linux Mint 12. So I'm not actually using GNOME 3. And let's see. If you go to the upper left corner, it actually behaves very differently. And I don't know if some of these things that he's talking about will work on Cinnamon. So I'm going to have to try it when we're not recording a podcast at 30,000 feet, moving the bolts.
And we'll get back to you on that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, this one's from the forums. It's from Twisted Lucidity, and I had to practice that several times. he was commenting on episode 163, and he says, after earlier comments, I paid close attention to 163, one of the Computer America shows. Unfortunately, I now find myself in agreement with the other posters. Craig said, someone installed Linux. It worked. Larry, you said, of course. Craig, they can play games. You, yes. Craig, and use the internet. You. Craig, it wasn't even hard. You, I think we've been here before. Craig, seems like Linux might be usable.
And all this only after 4 years of being on their show.
Yeah.
It's only taken me 4 years to get them to realize that Linux is usable.
it's not just this twitchy thing for geeks. All right.
Yeah.
And going back to Twisted Lucidity, he says, I understand that Computer America is not your show and that someone has to do the outreach work to dispel the myth that GNU Linux is only used by the elite hackers who mind meld with the terminal. But Computer America does seem to spend a bit too long going over the same ground. When the show moved on to Wine, that was good, as Wine does not seem to be as well known as it probably should be. One aspect of the show, which I think is really good, in parentheses, although it's a bit same ground, is where you help people, usually because the answer is fairly straightforward. Why not also advise each caller to look up their local LUG, that's Linux User Group, or the online LUG? Even if they don't fully participate, people are always happy to help. Heck, that might be a good section for the Computer America show. All the forums, IRC, and numerous other ways that GNU Linux community helps itself. And good on you for standing up for the command line interface. It's often easier for a novice to find the option in a graphical user interface, which is fair enough, but the command line interface is almost always faster once one knows what they need to do, and it can be automated. Have you ever mentioned on Computer America that multiple users can use a GNU Linux box without needing to log out? Maybe you have, and I'm just going senile. But when I started into GNU Linux, that was one of the features that blew my mind. Switch user, let them do their stuff, switch user back, and carry on trucking. And I've just noticed that I've skipped number 162. Oops! Keep up the good work! And unsigned, but that was Twisted Lucidity. And thanks, Twisted.
And that switching users thing, I used to do that when I was on
You're going to say the word, aren't you?
Many years ago. No, oh, okay. No. I'm not going to say that word. How can you? You can't switch users on that.
I don't know.
It doesn't work
I
like that.
I don't remember.
No. It's been so long. So when I was on OpenSUSE way back when, I used to switch users. I had a couple of different user accounts set up. Of course, I was learning Linux at that point, and I don't let anyone else on my Linux box, so I don't really use that all that much.
Yeah, yeah.
Stay away from my box.
Exactly.
Well, another thing, back in my W days, when I was married, my wife's kid would use the computer and screw up the fonts and mess around with all the controls, and I'd come back and have to fix things again. And that would be perfect. You know, the kid could go in there, log in on it as himself, and then screw around with whatever he wants, and you get your desktop back when you're home.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and of course you can have multiple users on those W machines, but I think the thing that Twisted Lucidity is letting us know about, and the thing that we should tout a little bit, is the fact that when you're on Linux, you can switch users, switch into another user, and then exit from that user, and you're back where you left off on your existing user, which you cannot do on that other operating
platform,
system.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's just because Linux was made to be a multi-user operating system. I mean,
exactly
all the security
right.
And, you know, even Tom showed me a trick. One time my desktop was unresponsive, and I was telling myself, I'm going to have to reboot. He said, no, just log into another session and fix it. I'm like, oh, how do you do that? Walked through, and you can open up another session, log in, and boom, you're right back. You got full access, so it might look like it's totally inoperable. But you always can open up another session and log in. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So was this the Control Alt F something other than 7?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Control Alt like F2, F3, or F4.
That's called opening a console.
Exactly.
But it's another session, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that's another user. So I mean, you can log into it as a root. You can log in as another user.
Yeah, the only thing you can't do when doing that is start X.
Yes.
So you can't have two X sessions running simultaneously, that way at least. It does help when you've got something that's hanging up your graphical user interface and you just need to shut it down and there's no response on the graphical user interface. You can't get the terminal to come up because the GUI is all messed up.
Right.
Control-Alt-F3 or something like that, log in and sudo kill all whatever is the problem, and then Control-Alt-F7 to get back to your graphical environment, and things are working again.
A lot of times it's not a good idea to just shut Linux off by the power key or pull the cord. It doesn't like it too much. You're risking some problems.
Yeah, that's right. If you can't shut down from the graphical user interface and it's not responsive, rather than, you know, hard powering it off with the power button, you can go into Control-Alt-F3, F4, whatever, log in, and then sudo halt. And that will shut down in an orderly fashion your computer from that terminal. And of course, the entire computer turns off at that point, including the frozen graphical environment on F7.
Of course, I always like the other term, shut down now. I don't know. I like the power. Shut down now, darn it. Okay. On our first email, it was from David. He said, hi, Larry. Hi, Tom. Or whoever.
Well, hi, David.
Hi, David. Hi.
I guess you're the whoever, Bill.
Okay. Well, that's okay. The minion will take that. A couple of comments, questions from an old and loyal listener. A loyal listener listens to every Going Linux episode except for Computer America. A faithful listener listens to every Going Linux episode, including Computer America.
Well, I'm glad we have that distinction made now. That's good to know.
Okay. Going on, he says, I have been using Linux Mint for a couple of years now and have been very happy with it. However, I have an old computer without a GPU, and now with Linux Mint 12, I can only run either GNOME Classic or Mate, both of which are much less friendly to what I have had with Linux Mint 11. I decided to go with Linux Mint Debian Edition LMDE using XFCE, and I am now as happy as a pig, dot, dot, dot. What do I know about pigs? I'm Jewish.
Oh. Well, you know, they're happy because you're not eating them.
And there you are.
So my first common question, one of the attractive Linux attributes is the ability to lengthen the life of old computers and still be able to use current software. I may not be able to do 3D stuff, but I can get new capabilities and features with each new release. Now I can't. This means that I now go backwards in functionality. Things I was able to do under Linux Mint 11, I now cannot, except for Linux Mint Debian Edition. In order to be current, I no longer gain new capabilities, but also lose existing capabilities that GNOME gave me. What are your feelings? Any suggestions? I have now found Linux Mint Debian Edition using XFCE while activating Nautilus rather than Thunar to be my workable solution. Thus, I am running GNOME 3 without the shell, but with its old capabilities such as panels. Setting them up and doing other customizations are easy, and I have the same functionality I had with Linux Mint 11. However, as warned, to use Linux Mint Debian Edition, one needs to be satisfied with a less reliable system. I even crash every so often, and weird things sometimes happen on the desktop, and then just as suddenly resolve themselves. Also, even though we expected that after Linux Mint 12, Clem and crew would return to supporting LMDE, there has not been an update in months. This causes the serious concern that we are missing required security patches. So, am I being forced into buying a new machine or using a much less functional distro? Do you have any info on Linux Mint? Will they be supporting LMDE again soon? Also, the latest I've read is that they are developing Cinnamon instead of using MGSE. Will this solve the problem of those of us without GPUs? As usual, thanks for all your hard work. Going Linux continues to be an excellent show, but I have been missing Tom lately. Bestest, David, the expat Canadian in Israel.
Thanks, David.
Yes, thanks. And what do you guys think about his comment on because we're using Linux Mint 12, those of us who are using it, we're being forced to get new hardware or at least give up some functionality.
I am not equipped to comment on this, guys. I'm still on good old Ubuntu.
I have a few things. First off, Linux Mint 11 was working for him. It's still supported with security updates. He should have just used it until, he found something other. And there's also a lot of different distributions. CrunchBang is great for low-end machines that still offers video playback and MP3 support. And you've also got quite a bit of different desktops that take a bit, LXDE is a real lightweight desktop, OpenBox, Fluxbox. So he's not really going to have to buy new hardware. He just might have to look for something that he's not just used to.
So, guys, as far as his question about LMDE and Linux Mint, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, well, knowing David and knowing that I edited a couple of things out of his very long email, I know that he is trying to stay current with the latest developments. So one of the things he's done with LMDE is he has, for example, installed the latest Firefox because it's not available in the repositories. So he's one of the kind of people who wants to be on the latest software. And I think his main concern here is that LMDE's development has stopped, at least been put on hold while they've been messing around with GNOME 3 and then Cinnamon, and now they're working on the KDE version to get it going, and LMDE seems to be taking a back seat, as we suspected it might. And quite frankly, as I've said before, the Linux Mint team is a small team, so they can't be doing everything simultaneously.
Sure.
So one of the things that I might suggest is that if you can stay on the latest GNOME release, like Linux Mint 12, and then instead of going to LMDE and installing XFCE as your desktop environment or your window manager, just go in under Linux Mint 12 and install XFCE. Then you have the advantage of the Linux Mint 12, the new kernel, the new features in Linux Mint, and you have the XFCE desktop that you can work with. One of the things you'll be missing, though, is some of the Linux mintifications, some of the tools that you would find. But I think the GNOME ones will work under XFCE, if I'm not mistaken. Certainly the GNOME extensions won't work, but you wouldn't have those under Linux Mint 11 anyway. So it's something worth trying, I think, if you have the ability to switch distros again.
Yeah.
All right, so our next email is from Bob, who wrote in with an article about space.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. He says, "Hi, Tom and Larry." Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
And he provides a link right off the bat, which is from the NASA.gov site. We'll include that link in the show notes. "I saw this on Google Plus and I thought that you guys would get a kick out of it. NASA has gone open source. They have invited the good hackers of the world to help develop the space program. Cool. I think that you will agree with me that open source projects often bring results that the originator of the project never imagined. Love the show, Bob Erickson."
Very cool.
I want to drive the Mars rover.
I want to play with the robot arm.
Yes. Well, and since the government has cut back on the funding for space exploration, volunteer, community, open source, I think that's about the only way we can keep NASA alive. What do you think, guys?
And private enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah, a private enterprise. That's right. Yep. Yep.
I still want to drive the rover.
Well, you know, I think they did do that. They had a website at one point where you could actually go in and steer it.
It was on in a sandbox on Earth, though, wasn't it?
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. I remember hearing something about it, though. That would be cool, though.
But if I get it stuck in a ditch, AAA is not going to be able to get it out.
Or you lock the keys in it.
Oops. I'll be pointing to say Tom did it.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Bob.
Thanks. That's great, thanks. Bob.
I'm going to check that out. Next up, Robert wrote in with his experience. "Hello, Larry, Tom, and Bill." Hello,
hey.
Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Robert.
"I've been listening to your podcasts and enjoy them very much. Keep up the good work. I know there's been a lot of conversation regarding Unity. For now, I'm sticking with Ubuntu Unity until 12.04 long-term support. Learning any new desktop is a challenge. I remember switching from KDE to GNOME. I run Folding at Home on my main desktop. It is a quad-core machine. My ancestry suffered with Alzheimer's diseases, so I have vested interest in finding a cure. One thing I have noticed, since upgrading to 11.10, my CPU temperature has dropped. Under 11.04, typically I would see temperatures of about 60 degrees Celsius. Now, with 11.10, I see 50 degrees C temperatures, and my fans are not spinning as fast. Seems to be an improvement to me. My case might be unique, but this tells me I have a lower overhead. That is, programs running, if you know what I mean. Thanks, guys."
Well, thanks, Robert. And it may not be lower overhead. Was 11.10 when they first introduced the new kernel where they had the optimizations in for power management put in?
I think whatever you're running, when the kernel upgrades come, they come. So maybe it was just a kernel upgrade that fixed it, and he would have been fine staying on the old one.
Yeah, maybe. That's kind of what I'm thinking is, I know they've done some optimization of the code to help with these things in the latest kernel. So that's a possibility, but however it came about, we're really glad that it's working out for you.
Yeah.
I remember reading that they said that they were working on the power regression issues. I don't know if that has anything to do with heat generation, but apparently there's like, what, 5 or 10 lines of code that made it more efficient. So
yeah.
I know I've dropped on my Lenovo, on the old kernel, it would run about 45 Celsius, and now just idle. And with the new kernel, it runs at about 38. So,
yeah, I don't monitor the temperature of my machine, but with the 3.0 kernel, and I guess I'm using 3.0.0-12 generic on a 64-bit machine, and I noticed that the fan doesn't kick on quite as much, so that's indicative of a cooler running machine, I think. And the CPUs don't peg out maximum as much either, so I think they've done a good job on this new kernel.
We got another email from Sam with his perspective on desktop environments. He goes, "Hi, guys."
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Sam. I've been using Ubuntu 11.10 for a while now, and yes, I installed GNOME. GNOME 3, I think, is the desktop environment. I love it so much more than Unity.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share some tips with you. My cursor kept on sticking on the screen and not responding to the touchpad. I found that logging out and back in fixed it in the end. Anyway, my first tip is to enable the mouse keys option in the Universal Access drop-down list located in the bar along the top of the screen alongside the volume control. This lets you move and click the cursor with the number keys on your keyboard, if you have them. Even if it doesn't respond to the touchpad or mouse. Mm-hmm. 2. I had a problem with my desktop where when I logged into the user-defined session, there was absolutely no desktop features, Unity or on GNOME. All there was the desktop background and my icons. The other two tips are these commands, Unity-2D-Launcher. This command starts the Unity-style sidebar, the one that shrinks away when the cursor is not hovering over it, and the other one is GNOME-panel. This command starts the GNOME-style overhead bar with the date and time in the middle. These commands really help me get back in control of my system, whereas before I was powerless. I only managed to open the terminal to run the aforementioned commands with the key combo Control-Alt-T. Thanks for all the casts. Keep them coming, and I'm loving Linux in general. That's from Sam.
Yeah, and for those users who aren't familiar with Control-Alt-T, that's a keyboard shortcut to open a terminal.
Larry, he sounds like he's having some configuration issues. He didn't tell me what kind of computer was running or anything. What do you think is causing these problems?
I don't know. I know that sometimes when I install a Linux distribution on a computer, even one that I've installed Linux on in the past, sometimes the mouse won't work or there'll be some other weird thing that should work out of the box but doesn't. And then logging out and logging back in fixes it. It could be that the drivers for whatever it was weren't loaded properly on the initial install, or it could be that the hardware wasn't recognized properly. I really don't know. It sounds like maybe a hardware issue or a configuration issue or something, but I'm at a loss. As you said, we don't know what the hardware is that he's using or too much about his specific situation, so it's really hard to tell.
I do have a quick question for you. What happens when you do use the logout? What happens when you log out instead of, you know, a lot of times it says log out and log back in to get the changes mm-hmm. And, right. Windows or the W word, you have to shut completely down. How is that? I don't understand how you can only just log out on Linux and log right back in, and you never unless you're updating a kernel or something, you never really have to restart it.
Right. Well, one of the differences between the way Windows works and the way Linux works is this. Windows, when you have something installed on the hard drive, it actually runs it from the files that are on the hard drive. So as you're running the program, it's constantly looking back at the hard drive and saying, okay, I need this file, or I need to access this portion of the program. Whereas with Linux, you can think of it this way. It may not technically be completely accurate, but you can think of it like this. When you run a program, it will access the program from the hard drive, then load what it needs into RAM, and then run it from RAM. So you're not actually running from the files on the hard drive. That's what allows you to replace a program with a new version of it, even if you're currently running it in Linux. So you continue to run the old version when you shut down that version of the application and you restart it. Now you're running the new version. So same thing with logging out. If you have something that loads on login, as opposed to something that's an application that loads when you start it, when you log out and log back in, it unloads whatever it is and then loads it back up again, like the desktop environment. So you can change your desktop environment as you're running an old version and replace it with a new version. And all you have to do is log out and log back in again, and you've got the new features.
Interesting. That's handy.
Yeah, so that's, again, one of the fundamental design differences between Windows operating system and the Linux operating system that makes Linux far superior. And that's what causes you not to have to reboot in Linux when you install an application, because the only time you really have to reboot is if you're changing some of the underpinnings of Linux, like the kernel or something like that.
All right.
Okay, well, let's move on to Martin. Martin writes an email. He writes me an email. That's what we're doing. Martin needs to find old episodes. He writes, "Hi, Larry and Tom."
Hi, Martin. Hey, Martin.
I remember you had an episode where you explained how to do command line stuff via graphical desktop GUI. For the command line freaks who want to go graphical. Unfortunately, I cannot find it anymore, and I have a friend here for whom this would fit well. Can you find it for me? Best regards, Martin. Well,
I know what he wants, but do you want to first explain how to find something on our site?
Yeah, good point. So the easiest way to find something on the Going Linux website, let me do this as we're talking. So goinglinux.com. Okay, over on the right-hand side, there's a search box. It's got the Google logo on it because we're using Google's technology here. If you ensure that the little radio button that says goinglinux.com is selected, it will search only our site. So in that box, if you type in command line, click search, it now comes up with links to our links and resources page where we have information about the command line, Linux system information on our site, Linux bash scripting, an introduction. That would be one of the two shows where we talked about this. And then there's another one further down the page, the advanced episode on bash scripting. And I forget the application now.
I know it.
Go ahead.
Zenity.
Zenity.
Z-E-N-I-T-Y.
Right. And it is there. So it gives you that little graphical thing that you can use to run command line things.
The documentation for Zenity is pretty horrible. But if you're running Ubuntu, you can go into the help section and search for Zenity, and they've got a pretty darn good set of instructions, good documentation.
I think Ubuntu, at one point, I don't know whether the current versions of Ubuntu with Unity do or not, but at one point they installed Zenity by default.
Oh.
Yeah, on some of the, or maybe it was Linux Mint. One of them. I was a little surprised to see it, and that was sometime after we did our Bash shell scripting episodes. So kind of cool. It works really nicely, and I like it.
And as an aside, I wrote a script for Xenity that exercises, I think, just about every possible function and demonstrates it. Was it Martin? Yeah, Martin. Martin, if you want that, write to us, and I'll send you a copy of it. One embarrassing thing, there is a mistake in the script. And I noticed the mistake. It's a punctuation error. And I went, oh, well, that shouldn't be there. It's, I don't know, a quote that didn't get ended or something like that. And I noticed it and took it out, and the script stopped working. So for some reason, my script contains a mistake that has to be there, and I don't know why.
Well, if it's a quotation mark or something, maybe you have to escape it with the backslash or something. But
so you pulled the bolts out, and it broke.
Yeah. I fixed it, and it got worse.
I was going to suggest that we could put your script on our website and let everyone download it, like put it in the show notes if that's okay.
And make fun of it.
And make fun of it, sure.
All right.
We can do that. If you want, if you don't want to, we can.
That's all right.
Yeah, and we'll do it.
Maybe somebody can explain to me why it works and it shouldn't.
Well, let's do it this way. Let's do community development work here. All right. So if you can fix Tom's script, we'll include it in the show notes, and you can use it as it is with the punctuation error, or you can fix it and provide it back. And in the true fashion of open source, you can provide it upstream to us, and we will fix it.
So you did you put it under GPL version 2 or 3, Tom?
Yeah. Actually, I went and copyrighted it. I had to go to... It cost me a couple thousand bucks at Barnes & Noble, but...
okay.
All right, so next up we have Eric, who provides a solution to the Zoom issue. Hello, Larry and Tom, and Chief Executive Minion Bill. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Eric.
I just listened to episode 162, and it was an excellent overview of GNOME 3 and Mint 12. I also recently switched to Mint 12, as I had been an Ubuntu user from the 7.04 days until the infamous Unity interface arrived. Mint 12 has been a great experience, with the exception of a few quirks, such as the ones you discussed. Like you, Larry, I also missed the desktop Zoom feature from CompiZ because I would like to use that feature, especially for recording screencasts for my soon-to-be-launched podcast. I did some internet strolling and found a certain package created by Tobias Quinn called GNOME Shell Mouse Wheel Zoom. The instructions for installation and the package files are on GitHub at, and he gives us a link, and we'll put that in the show notes. I installed the package using the instructions on the page. Apparently, you have to log out and back in for the Zoom to be enabled, but you can also enable Zoom after installation by typing the following command. All one word, mousewheelzoom.py. Once I did that, I can zoom in and out by holding down the Alt key and scrolling up and down on the mouse wheel. The only issue to be aware of is that if you are using dual monitors, like I am, if you try to zoom in on your secondary display, it will basically merge everything on the secondary display to your primary display. But, other than that, this package does the trick for me. I also wanted to thank you for producing both the podcasts and the screencasts for how to record a podcast using Audacity. I have watched and listened to them many times, and your practical demonstration and explanation of the key issues make producing a podcast actually sound feasible. Until next time, keep up the great work, and hope Tom has a speedy recovery, and I am. Regards, Eric. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Eric. Yeah. And I'm glad that the screencast and the podcast on recording using Audacity is useful for you. And send us the name of your podcast once you've got it up.
Sure.
We'll plug it on the show, at least mention it.
Yeah, and sing us your theme song and we'll play that.
Sure. You can hum it if you can't sing.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And that, I think, is it for the regular listener feedback.
Yeah.
And it looks like we have a Gone Linux story.
Okay.
So Tom wrote in with a Gone Linux story. Here's an Ubuntu experience story. Ubuntu enables Audacity, recording, streaming, audio, and he gives the link. And he says, my project this morning was to record the streaming audio of a short story which I will teach in high school. It is available as streaming audio, but I can't rely on the school's internet and Wi-Fi the day of the lesson. That would risk being left standing there telling the class, well, today I was going to teach X, and I was using Windows 7 and trying to record the streaming audio and running into problems and clicking around and around, Google, YouTube, etc. Finally, I got this page, and it says, quote, still don't see it. In some cases, your audio chipset drivers aren't helping your calls. Most likely, this is because they're outdated. In other instances, however, it's because the newest Windows 7 drivers don't support this feature. This was the case on my Asus EPC A1000HE, but I got around the issue by downloading and installing the older Windows XP Vista drivers for my audio chipset. As always, before changing your drivers, make sure you create a system restore point in case things don't go as planned. And he gives another link, and it's basically how it's from How to Geek, how to record stereo mix in Windows 7. And he goes, oh please, I need to mess with the drivers and set a restore point just to record a streaming audio. Then I booted into Linux and followed the directions here, and he gives another one from Ubuntu Geek on how to record audio in Ubuntu. And he says, piece of cake, recording done, exported as MP3 with the proper tags. I copied it into my Ubuntu One folder, and within 10 minutes, the file was on my Samsung Galaxy i9000, ready to be played in class. I also put the file on my disk on key. Ubuntu saves the day.
Excellent.
Yeah, so instead of messing around with your chipset drivers on Windows 7, just go boot into Linux
and, yeah.
And fix it right away, or not even fix it, and have it work right out of the box. Good stuff. Okay, guys, we're finished the email for today.
All right.
And I have a software pick. And my software pick is actually something that's provided by Nightwise, our favorite Belgian podcaster.
Uh-huh.
And it's BotSync, SSH, and GPotter. So it's actually three software picks all in one and working together. And we'll let Nightwise describe this in a second, but here's the problem to be solved. I use GPotter to download my podcasts. And I want to be able to synchronize them wirelessly to my Android phone without having to plug in the USB cable to do the sync. And Nightwise provides the solution using BotSync for the Android, SSH as a way of connecting, and GPotter, of course, to download the podcast. So here's Nightwise.
Hey Larry, Nightwise from Nightwise.com calling in regard to the remark that you had about listening to podcasts on your Android phone and using GPotter. You said the process wasn't as automated as it was with iTunes. Well, you can fix that. All you need to do is to enable the OpenSSH server on your Linux machine where you have GPotter installed. Next up, install the application BotSync on your Android phone. Next up, hook up your Android phone to the wireless network of your house, or your Linux machine is hooked up to as well, and enter the IP address of your Linux machine. Then enter the complete path where your podcasts are stored in GPotter. That would be slash home/Larry/GPotter/podcast or something and hit the copy button. BotSync will copy all of the podcasts over SSH over the air straight from your computer to your Android phone. If you forward the right ports and use DNS, you can even do this from wherever you are using Wi-Fi or 3G. It will make you pretty happy to wirelessly sync all of your podcasts to your phone without having to use a little cable, just like the people on iTunes have to do. So, as always, great show. Keep up the good work. See you guys around.
All right, excellent idea. I didn't know that, but I don't have an Android phone.
So I think Nightwise just recorded this on his recorder or his phone or something like that from his car. So apologize for the road noise there. But I did try this, and after listening to what Nightwise had to say, I downloaded the BotSync, installed it on my Android, already had SSH and GPotter running on my computer. About 10 minutes later, took me 10 minutes because I'm just that kind of guy. it was working perfectly, and it's great. It's wonderful. All I have to do is connect my phone to the Wi-Fi network, hit the bot sync icon, and boom, everything syncs over. Had to tweak a few settings on GPotter, but it worked great.
That is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So now I've got wireless syncing to my Android phone from GPotter.
I thought Apple could do that.
Of course. Well, Nightwise is one of these cross-platform sliders. He crosses between Mac and Linux and uses Windows only when he has to. So he has ways of connecting things to things that no one else might have figured out how to do, but Nightwise has. So if you're interested in sharing your audio, video, and pictures within your home network to any device on your home network, listen to Nightwise's Nightcast episode 57. He tells you how to do it.
Very good.
So, Tom, have you got a software pick or a website on how to get rid of black mold or anything like that?
getting rid of black mold, there's a product called Zymaway that does a very good job. Zymaway or something on that order. Good job. Okay. Software pick? Nope, no, nothing.
Okay, well, we'll go with the applications and chemistry pick that you just provided. Okay, Bill, your turn.
Okay. I have two picks. One's a website and one's a software pick. The first one is Hulu. Hulu will let you watch TV shows and certain movies for free using Linux. And I will include a link to show that they say any links will work.
Okay, well, some of their shows are free. Some of them they charge for, from what I've seen.
Well, you have to watch ads, but I can watch them. I mean, it's better than having to pirate it or be illegal. You can at least watch it and not get in any trouble, so that's always good. And the other one, the program I have is called Remind, and I heard about it on Floss Weekly, $199, if anybody's interested in hearing about it. And just to give you the 30,000 feet view, so Tom won't pull out the bolts, it's basically a command line calendar program that does a lot more, and it also has a front end called TK Remind, and basically it can do a lot of stuff. It can activate cron jobs. It can pop up and remind you when you have appointments. It can set. It can talk to backup. It can even talk to programs that run your backups and activate them. It's really flexible, and if you're interested in it, I'd recommend listening to Floss Weekly $199 and hearing about it, because I've installed it and I like it.
Excellent.
Yeah, great.
Now that Hulu, the Hulu thing is an application that runs on your computer?
Nope, it is a website.
Okay.
Yeah, it uses Flash and
sure.
other codecs, but they all work on Linux. I tried Linux Mint, Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, Fedora, and Sabian, and it all worked flawlessly in beautiful high quality. So if you're looking for a way to watch legal TV shows without, you know, getting in trouble, I'd suggest looking at Hulu and see if that will fit your need. I know I've watched a few and the quality's been excellent.
Yep. That's HULU, right?
Yep.
Okay, and we don't know whether that works outside of the US.
Yeah, we don't know. That's, I should have said that.
Yeah. Okay, well, that wraps the show. Our next episode will be a user experience episode. We haven't decided on the topic yet, so it'll be a surprise. Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And if you want to support our efforts, click the donate button while you're there. Email us with comments, questions, and suggestions.
And remember, if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, use forums to leave your topic suggestion in the thread called Topic Suggestions. And the link is forums.goinglinux.com.
You can also send us an audio comment by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail line is 1-904-468-7889.
And once again, that's voicemail. Nobody's going to answer it. You just record. And yes. You can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. We are Going Linux, all one word.
You can download the episodes from the website, or you can use the HTML5 or Flash Player to play them right on the show notes page.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
73s.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.